Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is 12 minutes past 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, the 15th of May. And, well, we've got a lot to talk about today. One is that it's Rosemary Armeo's last day on the radio with us. We had a party with her weeks ago, and we've been talking about it for a long time, but today is the final day, so...
So I have to be brilliant today.
You get on a plane?
Go out in a blaze of glory. Yes, I go out on a plane. I have to be at the airport at 1.
Leaving on a jet plane. I can't sing, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We get the idea. Thanks,
Lenny.
You get
the idea.
Thank you. Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, I'm a few bars for you.
And you're going to Jordan today?
I go to Sarajevo, and I won't get there until tomorrow afternoon. Then I get a day to sleep and get over jet lag, and then I'll be in Amman by Thursday.
Well, excellent. Well,
and after that, I don't know. I'm going to just jump in and see what happens. It's kind of like jumping off a cliff.
We'll follow you on the Facebook.
Yeah, definitely. I'm an addict. I'm always on Facebook.
Well, we'll stay tuned.
I really appreciate all the send-off at the station and from listeners, and it's been really quite amazing. And that's enough. Let's go to the news.
All right. Webby Post is with us as well, a communications political consultant. Yes, thank you very much. Alan Chartok is here as well. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. I just wanted to take a moment to remind everybody about just what this radio station means. At a time when terrible lies are being told by the President of the United States.
No kidding.
And while we're hearing from Mr. Clapper, that democracy itself is at stake here from the White House, and he was quite clear about that. We have a radio station here that has been known to speak truth to power. And I'm not kidding when I tell you that we are facing a lockbox, a historic amount of money we need, more than ever before, $500,000 to start the drive. And symbolically that everybody knows, okay, what does this mean? What does it mean to have a WAMC, which in the face of all this turmoil and tumult and all the rest, that we will be there doing what we're supposed to do, and our backbone comes piece by piece from you. So I'm just asking that you get on a telephone now, and I mean now because I'm really nervous about this, 1-800-323-9262. Again, 1-800-323-9262, or do it at WAMC.org. But if we turn our backs on this station after everything that it's done, and it's getting plenty of criticism, which is undeserved, but no, it's just undeserved because we're doing right. And there will always be people in our industry, outside of it, who just say, you shouldn't be speaking truth to power. You shouldn't do that. I'm doing it. We're doing it. And I just saying to everybody, if you believe in this station, please do it now.
Why would we not be here? I mean, why are we here if it not to speak truth to power?
That's it.
Really?
WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, and do it. It's very easy online. All of the mechanisms are in place, and we only have 3 weeks before we start the fund drive. We did it in a day last time. We certainly would love to do that again this time. But it's June 5th is when it all begins, so we want to get the lockbox full before then. So,
yeah. If anybody just decides, let somebody else do it, that's how we got the guy who's in power right now.
Mm-hmm.
We are 3 weeks away, 3 weeks to make $500,000. So
it's a lot of money.
WAMC.org. All right. Let's go to the stories, and we'll begin where Alan just started, which is with Mr. Clapper. And he was on, you will note, was on the Sunday news programs this weekend and said American democracy is under assault on separate fronts from President Trump and Russia, according to the former U.S. intelligence chief. Clapper expressed dismay over the abrupt firing of FBI Director James Comey amid an investigation of Moscow's meddling in U.S. elections and possible ties with the Trump campaign. As Trump works to fast-track Comey's successor, lawmakers from both parties urged him to steer clear of any politicians for the job and say he must clean up the mess that he mostly created. Clapper on CNN's State of the Union said, I think in many ways our institutions are under assault both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system, I think, as well as our institutions are under assault internally.
He was pretty specific. It's amazing. I mean, the interviewer asked him, said, are you talking about the White House? He said, yes.
Yeah. Clapper is not my favorite person. We know he lied about spying by the NSA before, and that really compromised him. Many people say, why should we believe him now? He has spoken kind of cryptically before. He did say, no, there's no investigation that I know of. And it took until yesterday to explain that the reason he doesn't know it is that these are supposed to be, Mr. Comey, secret investigations that no one knows about, including him in the position he was. So if we're in a terrible situation, it's partly because of men like James Clapper.
You know, one of the things that's so interesting is this business of, I think I'm probably getting ahead of us here, Joe, but who's going to be replacing Comey? It's fascinating because we are hearing all kinds of names, ranging from the former police commissioner of New York to top sycophants in the Senate of, you know. Now look, why in the world is this guy going to appoint Merrick Garland,
right?
Who is a man of fierce integrity, when he just fired a guy from who is even a little lower on the scale than Garland? So now, but what's important about Garland, who they really screwed over, if that's permissible, as a Supreme Court judge, they didn't even give him a hearing with a year to go. Why would they appoint a Garland when he would be not able to give the quote loyalty to the president that he's demanding? But what's significant here is that the Republicans, there are Republicans who are recommending that Garland be placed there.
I don't know where the word came from, optics. We keep talking about it. Someone scolded at you. It's really appearances. But that's what I think this is all about. It's an olive branch to say, oh, okay, you know, we're not that unreasonable. We're not going to diss the man totally. And I agree with you, Alan. I think there's no chance at all that Trump wants this independent man who really has something to hold against him. That would... It's so un-Trumpian as to be inconceivable to me.
Especially if you believe that where there's smoke, there's fire, and that what's going on with the Russian whole connection is real. I'm assuming it is. Why would you put somebody in who would be able to conduct an investigation that would find you out?
But let's be clear that... regardless of who he puts in, it's not going to change the culture at the FBI. They are still going to believe that they are, you know, truth, justice, and the American way. I watched James Comey last night on 60 Minutes. They redid an interview with him. And, you know, yes, I hate what he did with Hillary in the emails, but he did seem at that point when he was first appointed to have a lot of integrity. And I think that the people within the FBI are not going to follow lockstep with whoever the new director is because they're angry about this firing. And so things may just well continue.
Libby, I wish I could agree
subvertly
with you. There's been an awful lot of people, leaks from the FBI and others. They do what they're told. I mean, you know, if the guy at the top says, we're not going to do this investigation, the guy with three kids at home living in Arlington is not about to say, well, I'm standing up to do this. You need a guy at the top who really does insist on impartiality.
Well, two things. First of all, I cannot say, oh, the FBI is our savior. It's such a great agency. Oh. You remember all the rumors about how what Comey did to Hillary was because there was insurrection brewing in New York where agents don't like him. That doesn't sound like a great agency intent on truth, justice, and the American way to me. I really wish we did have Superman. And second, I think that Trump himself has assured that this investigation, by one means or another, maybe the Senate, will now take off. There's no way to avoid it right now because of what he's done this past week.
Especially if there were tapes and all the rest of that stuff.
So meanwhile, Chuck Schumer this weekend, also on the Sunday morning shows, said that he wanted to, was looking for someone not of a partisan background, but also wanted to tie it to the fact that they get a special prosecutor in this case and that the Democrats would hold off voting until they got that way, leaving open the possibility the Democrats would withdraw support for any FBI director unless the Justice Department names a special prosecutor.
The problem here is I'm going to name two numbers, 52 and 48.
Right.
That's the problem.
Got that
no
right.
Filibuster here. He hasn't got a lot to work with. The reason that I thought I should mention, you know, the idea of Merrick Garland is coming from Republican senators is that we don't know whether they'll follow up and say, okay, if it isn't going to be our guy, we're going to vote against, you know, some sycophant who is appointed, or whether they'll just fall into line and say, well, I wanted Garland, but I'll take whatever you got.
Donald Trump is saying that he hopes that a decision can be made before he leaves on Friday for his first overseas trip as president. So we'll see what happens over the next week. That seems faster than fast track, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say every morning I still wake up and say, okay, what did he do now? So.
And also, how many times have we heard I'm going to do it by Wednesday?
Right.
Yeah,
that
doesn't mean a whole lot.
Right. It doesn't mean anything.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and continue our conversation at WAMC.org. It's panel at WAMC.org to write to us, panel at WAMC.org. Alan and Rosemary and Libby, and we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. Okay, so do you think Donald Trump is taping in the White House, or was it just something that he said and it means nothing?
You know, he frequently has said things that seem wild and off the wall, and then they were true. Alan, you keep talking about how he kept talking about the election is rigged, and now it may indeed have been rigged, not the way we thought. And he's been obsessed with wiretapping, accused Barack Obama of doing it. He frequently does that projecting thing where he accuses someone else of doing
God,
what he's doing.
That's all he does.
So it really does. It seems unbelievable to me, and yet it's Trump. Yeah. Yeah, it could be.
Now, the thing that gave me pause was that apparently in his business and in the Trump world and empire, that this is a regular thing that they tape, and that the offices and the meetings and the phone calls and so forth. But then again, why do you tip your hand and say such a thing in a tweet? Unless you're just trying to cause trouble.
Oh, boy, that would be like going on an interview with, say, an NBC correspondent, an anchorman, and saying, yeah, I was thinking of Russia when I fired him. Gosh.
I did try to, yes. So what do you think? Is it a real deal or no?
I think it is. We've been talking about the Sunday shows. Did you notice there was absolutely no one from the administration?
Right.
Only Nikki
anywhere?
Haley. Nikki Haley was no White House aide. Only Nikki Haley was on.
And she was floundering.
Yeah. She was. She was.
Well, she's got a hard job. I think that's why no one else went on. So, I think
it's
possible.
And they're thinking about redoing the entire...
Yeah, the whole thing.
The entire thing and getting this woman who was passed over the first time to be in charge this time.
What whole thing? What are we talking about?
The staff. Gavin Priebus and Bannon and Sean Spicer, who was skewered on Saturday Night Live.
I watched
week.
It. You know,
it
there
was.
Are some things. I watched that one. And anybody can go online and watch it. But I tell you, this thing has gotten so unfunny that even when they're trying to be funny, it's not so funny anymore. Not when you're talking about your democracy.
I felt that way about Saturday Night Live this week.
That's what I'm talking about.
They went all out. I did not think it was funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was like over the top and kind of scary. Plus too much potty mouth and homophobic things.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is this. They were struggling for the 8 years of the Obama administration to be funny. And there's plenty of fodder here for them to rebound in the ratings.
Yeah, but if you're...
It was funny. I thought some of it was hilarious.
But if your country is facing the prospect of increasing fascistic rule and anti-democratic rule, it really stops being what it once was, you know, in the beginning. I don't know. It was more commentary than it was comedy.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it was using the words in a sort of a comedic way, but using the same words and kind of underscoring what was being done.
It's the Emperor Has No Clothes.
Yeah, and so where's Kellyanne Conway at this stage of the game?
Oh, Bill Maher was it who said back in the crypt?
Yeah, right. I mean, she was.
Yes, that was another physical remark.
Anderson Cooper a sexist because he rolled his eyes at something.
Oh, I know
it.
And I saw Morning Edition, Morning with Joe, whatever that thing is, and
the Lovebirds.
And they had all of her lies one after another. Boom, 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 boom. Sort of fascinating. And then, Brzezinski said that she was on one time and she said, okay, I've done what I should for my client, something like this. Now I have to go home and take a shower.
Wow.
There you go. Yeah. We have a lot of letters. We're going to get to those. We want to get to your thought, too, which means all you have to do is write to us. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Then we want to talk about Jeff Sessions. We want to talk about North Korea. We want to talk about hacking. We have a lot more to discuss, and we'll do that. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org, and it's our wind down, our final hour with Rosemary Armeo. It sounds like you're dying.
No.
I don't know.
I know. Somebody wrote that on Facebook. She's not dying.
We'll be right back. She'll prove she's very much alive right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. It is the 15th of May at 9:35 on this Monday morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post on the group this morning. We have letters, and then we'll go to more topics. As I said, we have a lot to discuss, so we'll get to the letters, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Okay. Peter says, if Trump insists that a prospective FBI director swear allegiance to him, wouldn't that come up in the confirmation hearings? And couldn't that possibly keep the person from being confirmed? Maybe, but I doubt it. I mean, if you have 52 Republicans who up to now have worked in lockstep, they're going to continue to work in lockstep unless it appears that their heinies might get roasted by being on the wrong side of history.
Right. 2018 is right around the
think
corner.
Think about that. Think about, 40 years from now or 30 years from now when they're talking about this whole thing, if they're allowed to, that is, by the way, and every senator and every congressman has to know that if they're on the wrong side of this one, you know, they're not going to look good. So anyway, Kay says,
but you know what, they'll be dead, and they won't really care. That's part of the problem.
Merrick Garland is the chief judge of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. He has served on that court since 1997. McConnell's idea of Garland as FBI director would allow Trump and the GOP to look good for a few moments. Two, the GOP would be able to replace Garland with a conservative. And three, he could fire Garland from the FBI at will. And that's a Machiavellian idea, says Kay. Well, Kay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. But I don't think they're going to take the chance of even putting him in there. Okay. Lynn says, Republicans would want Garland for one obvious reason. His position on the D.C. court would be open. This narrative is making the rounds. Hi to all. I thank everyone for all you do. A special thank you to Rosemary for helping me feel better to better understand our country and world affairs. I will miss you. And that's from Annie with a happy face.
Thank you.
Nice. Yeah, well. Wayne says, I would love to see Trump hooked up to a polygraph machine. It would look like his signature. And that's from Wayne and Amherst. You know, there are those, I've said this 1,000 times, and you've all heard me say it. You hook the guy up to the polygraph, and the question always is, do you get a straight line for telling the truth, or do you get a wavy line for lying? The true liars, the ones who believe their
own garbage.
That's right,
he believes his lies. So.
They get a straight line. So much for that.
Right.
Susan says, I just want to write, like hundreds of others, to say thank you to Rosemary. She has often voiced my concerns regarding our elected officials. a question the views have kept me from feeling crazy, knowing that I'm not the only one. I will miss her insights and fearlessness on the roundtable. I wish her success in her new endeavor. They are fortunate to have this remarkably capable woman. Best wishes, Susan. No crying, Rosemary.
Thank you, Susan. Yeah, no, it makes me uncomfortable. Only I got a lecture from Teresa saying that this is what women do. You know, it's, you don't just say, thank you very much. Yes, I deserve it. It's like, oh, no. It's nothing. It's nothing.
It is something.
So I'm trying to live up to that.
Say thank you.
I did. Thank you very much. I have loved doing this, and I can't think of a better compliment than from the person who said, I helped you to understand something. That's good for a teacher. And I think that's what the roundtable is supposed to do.
That's
just make us understand this,
understand
what's going on a little bit better.
So where we started it, the whole idea was you get the so-called hard news from NPR, and then you get this discussion, although I must say NPR never reaches the kind of level of understanding that we do here. I mean, I know that. So, and I think it's an appropriate letter to you. And Michael says, the radical right does not care if the things their leader says is the truth or lies, offensive or even unconstitutional. As long as it sets the liberal left on an hysterical fit, they are joyous. And that's from Michael.
Yes, and there was an article in the Times opinion section about that. It's the anti-Trump. And it's all about getting us riled up.
What is this that we're riled up? We're worried and concerned and talking and acting. Well, is that the same as being riled up? Were the Tea Party people riled up?
Well,
they're reacting.
Right. It's that they don't care the right or the wrong of it. As long as they can bash the liberals, that's what makes them happy. So it doesn't matter what the substance is. It's all about just bashing progressives.
It on.
Right. That's all.
Well, it's astounding. Okay, so then we also heard from Samantha, who says, sorry, Rosemary, to do this on your last day, but I watched all the hearings, and Clapper was clear all at the time that he didn't know and that he also wouldn't know, not because he was a different department, also due to the timeline when he left government. So kudos to Clapper. And come on, panel, says Glenn. Get realistic. The choice of Garland would open up another judicial appointment for Trump. That's the only reason his name is being floated by the Republicans. No, I don't think so. I have a different take. I think they know they screwed up with the Garland appointment. It was fascistic not to follow the Constitution, not to give Obama a chance, they're always yelling, vote him up or down, vote him up or down. And they didn't do that. And they know they didn't do it. And they have to hang their heads in great shame.
Well, I do think that he must think that it could come back on him sometime the same way that the nuclear option has come back on the Democrats. I don't think he has any real shame about what he did to the Constitution. But that is an interesting point, point that Garland holds in a very important seat.
Right.
And a very liberal federal court, an important federal court.
Right.
It would be very good for them to get an appointment
that
court. Not a bad theory at all.
And then if he gets Trump angry, we all know you're fired.
It's
that's right.
Not only that, but I'm so troubled by the radical right, sticking with it without thinking about any of this. I got a letter this weekend which was very disturbing, which referenced the ovens. You better watch out and about the ovens.
Geez.
Yeah. And it is
not even just the radical right, Alan. Trump spoke this weekend at Liberty University, gave the commencement address. Jerry Falwell Jr. is the head of that, and he said, defended his support and the really, really extraordinary support of the evangelicals to this godless, heathen, lying creep, and basically said, well, you know, all the politicians are like that. What really matters is what they do, and he has done everything that he has promised that he would do. Unlike other people, we have support.
Do all you anti-Americans, lefty goons, get on the same stupid train to write your spew?
Oh, I believe that's a bite me letter.
Parrots. Maybe talk to your real leader, Soros, about the ovens.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
They're out there.
Oh, sure they're out there.
Hey, and they got guns.
There was a torch. A demonstration, lit torch demonstration in Charlottesville this weekend, because they're wanting to take down a statue of, I think, Robert E. Lee.
Yes.
Well, in Saratoga, they're getting letters.
Well, right, and that too. But I mean, they are out there, and Trump has emboldened them.
Yep.
There's no two ways about it. We saw that
and
in the
spate. And this from a guy who is often referred to as a lifelong Democrat.
Who, Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there is that tape of him saying if he ever ran for president, he'd run as a Republican because they're so stupid.
Been debunked.
I saw the tape, and I saw him say it.
Let's just say that we have a little standoff here. You're saying what you're saying, and Rosemary's nodding.
I don't believe he ever really said that. I think you need to check that.
Well, but would it be unthinkable that he would say that?
No, that's how fake news starts, because it seems believable.
Okay.
Check.
I will, because I saw the tape.
All right, break it up, break it up.
All right. To this point, though, a group of white nationalists carried torches on Saturday night and Sunday in Charlottesville, Virginia, while protesting the planned removal of Confederate statues in the city, an incident that has provoked anger and frustration from politicians and activists. The torch wielders were reacting to a November 28th city council vote to remove a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee at Charlottesville's Lee Park, the public space where the protest took place on Saturday. A court injunction has halted the removal of the statue for 6 months, but that didn't stop the protesters, led by white nationalist Richard Spencer, from repeatedly chanting slogans like "We will not be replaced," "Russia is our friend," and "Blood and soil at the site of the statue."
Russia is our friend.
I gotta say that I'm pretty proud of my son Jonas and his wonderful wife Andrea, because they've been in the forefront of this take down the statues thing, mm-hmm. and they haven't pulled back, and they've gone out and they have faced some pretty angry mobs, which you might expect in Louisiana, it really is unbelievable. I mean, how can you worship at the statue of somebody who stood for enslaving human beings?
Well, okay, wait. They don't worship at them, but many people, including my mother, think that these are historical monuments, and that taking them down doesn't change attitudes. We're seeing that with the protesting, that it's just destroying history. It's the same as destroying old buildings, Dutch colonial buildings in Albany.
So why don't you just show me the statue of Hitler, because under that kind of thinking, it's just historical. It's not historical. It's disgusting.
It's not just historical, but you're saying, oh, there's no reason, and you're worshiping at it. It's not like they're golden idols that people still dance around.
Well, you'd be surprised. And you would be surprised.
They don't need the statues to do
it. I'm sorry. I get that, but to them, it's a symbol for the public to see that they are still there. And the fact that they took torches out, and Richard Spencer, who was there, who's one of the grand wizards and the head of the alt-right, I mean, I totally disagree with you here.
Spencer was in Washington doing this, and there are no monuments there. I don't think these monuments also should be destroyed. They are history. Keep them in a building, in a museum, with tags saying this is evidence of our racist past, but I don't think they should be destroyed.
Well, destroyed is one thing, but taken down from public
they should
access.
Be taken down.
I think so. You know, I mean,
I agree they should be taken down. Don't get me wrong. I just think that it's wrong to impugn the opposition of many people as simply racist.
Yeah, yeah. We were in Savannah once, and we were in the famous circle where Forrest Gump sat waiting for the bus. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
They took the bench, and they put it in the Savannah Museum.
You know, yes, Robert E. Lee, the Confederacy, it was part of our history. It's not a part of our history that we should be celebrating. Just like the Germans don't have anything up with Hitler. They know. And Nuremberg, you know, and that whole area is used as history and to teach people of what should never happen again. So there's a...
And let's assume you're black, living in New Orleans or one of those places, and you see these, you have to explain to your kids who these people were.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post, we welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue. And while we were talking about all of that just a moment ago, let us talk about Jeff Sessions. As a senator, Jeff Sessions was such a conservative outlier on criminal justice issues that he pushed other Republicans to the forefront of his campaign to block a sentencing overhaul, figuring they would be taken more seriously. Now Mr. Sessions is attorney general and need not take a backseat to anyone when it comes to imposing his ultra-tough on-crime views, the effect of his transition from being just one of the 535 in Congress to being top dog of the Justice Department was underscored on Friday when he ordered federal prosecutors to make sure they threw the book at criminal defendants and pursued the toughest penalties possible. This is part of President Trump's promise to keep America safe, Mr. Sessions said on Friday as he received an award from the New York City Police Union to mark the beginning of National Police Week.
Cruel little man.
Mm-hmm.
This is an area that there actually is agreement between many Republicans and Democrats that the laws were draconian, that they were filling the prisons. We have the largest prison population of any westernized industrialized country, and this will only add to it. They're racist because they inordinately affect minority communities. What is the purpose of this?
It's all about putting more black people in jail. And then privatizing the jails so that people like Jeff Sessions can make more money.
As you said, it was there was a bipartisan effort mm-hmm. to roll back many of these laws, and it was certainly growing. Meanwhile, we look at someone who has very outspoken views on drug use and putting drug offenders back in jail and to undo any of President Obama's sentencing policies.
Yeah.
And his invitation to Duterte to come to the United States.
Yeah, the guy who goes around killing people.
This is not nice stuff. Yeah. This is,
And this really just doesn't make sense because here on one hand they want to cut that drug office which would deal with the opioid issue and mm-hmm. then, let's just put those people in jail and not provide them with any kind mm-hmm. of services. And, that this is one more step, as you have said many times, of the police state.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to read my favorite paragraph of the article, which is, backers of the sentencing overhaul say that Mr. Sessions, who is a senator from Alabama, supported mm-hmm. legislation that would have made a second marijuana trafficking conviction a capital crime.
Can you believe
this? Is living in the past and is badly misguided.
Right, the capital crime. So does that mean if somebody who has a medical marijuana
license
in one
state? I mean,
my
son would be dead for one thing.
But the
chamber for him.
The medical marijuana stuff. I mean, in one state
yes,
and you're
right.
transporting it
to another,
and it's all legal and blah, blah, blah. Oh, nope, sorry. You're going to capital crime, you're going to death penalty.
If you guys were up early enough this morning, you would have heard the last half hour of the BBC where they have a historical 10 minutes that they do right before the news comes on, NPR news comes on. And they were talking about George Wallace, and mm-hmm. his son was on, and his son said, that George Wallace, who was one of the fiercest segregationists of all, literally got down on his knees and asked for forgiveness from black churches for what he had.
He was a cripple. Mm-hmm. How'd he get on his knees?
Well, okay.
I have to caution that story.
Well, okay, you're exactly right.
In the metaphorical sense.
I said crippled. Handicapped.
Well, shame on you.
Disabled.
Disabled. Okay, sorry. That just came out.
Okay, well.
Without thinking.
All right, so... But the reason I raise that with you all is that at some point people know they have to face St. Peter or the equivalent, and in what other religions, and they realize they take stock of what they've done, and I think Sessions may be one of those guys who's going to have to do exactly that. Also from Alabama, I may add.
Mm-hmm. But he also clearly is not learning from history.
It isn't going to happen soon from the looks of it. I still want to know what he was doing being involved in the firing of James Comey if, as the president said, he did think about the Russia investigation.
Sure.
He's supposed to be recused from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you unrecuse yourself?
I don't know how that works.
Yes,
I don't know what the protocol is.
Just say, I'm back in.
That's all. You just say, okay, I'm done being recused.
Yeah, right. I'm back in now.
Recuse me.
I feel refreshed, so I'm coming back. Mm-hmm.
And we should note that even though all of this is going on, detractors are saying, well, Congress will intervene, we'll establish new policy through legislation, and who's overseeing all of that? Jared Kushner. Okay.
Yeah, we feel so good about that.
Okay, so hi, panel. Even if you don't think SNL is funny, is not the point. If you listen to the dialogue carefully, SNL is quite biting and doing America service by exposing the emperor, pardon me, with no clothes and who is basically a criminal. And the more voices out there shouting this fact, the better. Comedy is a subversive way to the truth. I will miss Rosemary very much. Good luck to her. I vote for Malcolm Nance to take her place. Well, Malcolm Nance, who earns, I'm sure, a great deal of money from MSNBC, is always welcome here, and we've invited him time and time again. He comes here when he can, but he's always welcome. Okay. And Carol says, I have been wondering lately if we might want to consider a revision of the qualifications for this so powerful and important position of presidency of our Constitution, of our country. I'm so sorry. And if so, what would we want to include or exclude? I can just see what's going to be in that amendment.
Right.
Yeah. Panel. I think Comey said the FBI was engaged in a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation. Don't you need a criminal investigation to have a prosecutor? Please correct me if I'm wrong, but does the demand make sense process-wise? Well, I think, Scott from New Lisbon, that we now know much more than we did before. And we do know that the heat is being turned up. As Jim wants to know, Alan says he believes there is a fire at the bottom of the Russian smoke. Could he tell us what he thinks happened, or scenarios of what might have happened? And that's from Jim. Well, here's what we do know. We do know that all of these people in the Trump campaign were very active with the Russians, and they've been exposed for that. In addition, we know that Trump himself, as he was campaigning, talked about how wonderful Putin was, how wonderful the Russians were. Smoke, and there's the fire. And now we are hearing reports, are we not, Rosemary, of banks or of businesses that made loans to the Trumps during this time. And whether there was a quid pro quo would be something that an investigation would have to look at. Okay, so thank you for that, Jim. Now, Lauren says, I was walking out of my door and suddenly your signal and radio sound stopped. I suddenly realized that without a station, a window on the world would be closed forever. Such a precious gift you give our community. Thankfully, for the reason the signal was lost was simpler than the FCC summarily cutting off your signal. My iPod unplugged when it fell off the window. So, whew. And that's from Larry. Okay.
Yeah, they don't work that quick at the FCC. Somebody would have to pull a really big plug.
Luke says, there's a growing debate fight about whether the left should spend less energy on the Russia developments and keep the focus on health care and things like voting rights, which are closer to Dems' hearts. I'd love to hear your opinions on this. Thanks, and bon voyage, Rosemary.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Well, considering their new commission on election integrity.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I know.
The chutzpah factor.
Gosh. Really?
We know, do we not,
yes,
that the Republicans in this country, every time somebody tries to get access, more access for voters, not for Democratic voters.
No,
they
just
say
for
no
voters. They try
because they know
down.
What this.
Right.
They know that the more people who vote, the more likely it is that their positions mm-hmm. would be in danger.
Well, and they know they're using these words, election integrity, which directly relates to it's rigged. So we need to make sure there's integrity, and for them, integrity means white male voters, and that's it.
All right.
That was the original intent of the
Of the Constitution,
might
right.
I note.
It's true.
Read
We're
Charles
going back
Beard.
To that.
Right.
Read Charles Beard. Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our program. We'll have more letters. We have other things to discuss. We, of course, want to talk about North Korea. We will be back. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be right back after
And remember
this.
The lockbox.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 15th of May, and we have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post.
You're going to go out in a blaze of glory, Rosemary?
No. I have to tell you something I did this weekend.
What'd you do this weekend?
Because I'm a little bit mad that you didn't tell me about this before, but in Schenectady near Union Colleges, MOPCO, the improv theater.
Is your social life his responsibility?
Yes, to a large extent, since I'm here most of the time.
And by the way, didn't we already say off the air that we had done...
Yes. Many, a story on them?
And I
many stories
it.
On them, yes. But go ahead.
But anyway.
He takes some exception to you saying, why didn't anybody tell me? Because he did tell you.
I'm woefully unaware, but until this weekend, I go to improv.
Okay, it's my fault.
It is. As all these very cool and talented people who just like get an assignment and they instantly act it out. They sing it. They're funny. It rhymes. How do they do that? It's like magic. So I got to judge it. I thought it was really a blast.
That's cool.
Trained.
Go take classes.
Trained improv performers.
Yeah, they give the classes so that you can learn how to do it too.
That's really good. You were judging it? Is that what
I was a judge. Yeah, you know, they put on a skit and then you hold up a little number like at the Olympics.
Really?
Yeah, it was fun.
Dancing with the Stars, actually.
Yeah, I was like the celebrity judge.
So you got booed?
Yeah, because I rated one group really low, but I thought it was fair. I thought they were fabulous, all of them.
Except for the ones you rated lowly.
Except for them.
It was just off. It was just a little off that one time. That's all. Very funny. And nothing to do with politics. There's humor that is not politically based, which sort of
I had
to be reminded of it. Yeah, they did things on mothers and excuses that workers give for being late to work. It was, you know, life stuff.
Knock knock jokes.
I didn't hear any knock knock jokes, but yeah, I just.
There's more to life than
there's
the,
more
just
to
the
laugh
knock,
at than Donald
joke.
Trump.
Sure, that's much more important than our democracy going into the crapper.
Okay, I needed a small
the
break.
The thing is,
from
this
that.
You need to take care of yourself. You need to laugh. You need to love in order to continue to do this work, so that the nation does not go into the crapper.
There you go. So MOPCO Improv Theater.
It's all just right. That simple.
Very nice, Rosemary.
I'm done.
Thank you very much. Okay.
That was like underwriting, wasn't it?
We try not to make it sound like that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
All right. North Korea launches a missile, its first test after an election in South Korea. North Korea launched an intermediate-range ballistic missile on Sunday, the first test since a new president took office in South Korea this past week and called for dialogue with the North. The missile took off from the northwestern part of the country, flew more than 430 miles before landing in the sea between North Korea and Japan, according to the South Korean military. Data on the launch was still being analyzed by the South to determine the type of missile.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know they got them. We know they got nuclear stuff. We know they can put the nuclear thing on top of the other thing. So what is there to really establish? I love this stuff about it. We have to establish why the plane came down. Yeah, well, we do. But on the other hand, it's down. People got killed. This is a reality. And Trump said that he was going to fix this. And how exactly is he going to do that?
Now, the White House, in their statement over the weekend, said that North Korea had been a flagrant menace for far too long.
Indeed.
And that the test served, quote, as a call for all nations to implement far stronger sanctions.
Okay, so the people of North Korea are starving as it is. We know that. He takes all the money and he puts it into missiles and does what he's doing. So what is, you know, what does he care? I mean, the question for me has always been, if he does something nuclear, there won't be a North Korea anymore. There just won't be another North
Right.
Korea. North Korea, so it's over. So my question has always been, does he care? Is he Slim Pickens on the bomb or not going down?
And Nikki Haley tweeted over the weekend that there are no excuses that justify North Korea's actions. This was close to home for Russia. China can't expect dialogue. This threat is real.
You know, this is a lesson in why you need diplomacy. There was nothing to justify what Hitler did, so we started a war. Is that really what we want now? Because it wouldn't just be North Korea that would be disappearing. It would be much of Asia.
The entire area.
Yeah.
Well, I will remind
so,
you.
So diplomacy means you go in and these are North Koreans want those nuclear weapons. You cannot entice them. You cannot sanction them out of wanting it. So what do you do instead? You make little, slow, tiny steps to contain them over not just a year or two, certainly not over the course of the Trump administration, but over decades. That's what diplomacy is.
Well, no, you
we
mentioned,
seem to just, and it's not just Trump who hates it, it's we American people, we like big actions.
Well, you
that's war.
You mentioned diplomacy, and there was this reference to Hitler. If I heard you correctly, could you just restate that proposition? Because it was an attempt at diplomacy. You may
yes,
remember
there was.
Chamberlain in Czechoslovakia.
That was not, even that, and I know the whole thing, and that's the rap on diplomacy, but was it well done? Was that really diplomacy the way I'm talking about, where you have low-level people talking to figure out small, tiny steps to keep it contained? No, that was a grand gesture by Britain to say, okay, we solved the whole thing.
Okay, so what would you do? What would you do now?
The same thing that the last three administrations did.
I would
knock it back down.
Except that they're making tremendous progress right now.
Who is?
The North Koreans.
Yeah, this missile actually flew compared to the last one.
Well, but there have been several that have flown. Mm-hmm. And we do know that they've had nuclear explosions.
This is China's job. The problem is that we are at odds with China, and I guess we're at odds with Russia, I'm not quite sure. But, you know, we were always dependent on China putting the screws to North Korea to get them to stop this. And with all the rhetoric coming out of the White House about China, whether it's good or bad or during the campaign, is there any conversation going on with China
to
do this?
Well, you can bet there is.
The State Department is decimated. You know, you want low-level people. There aren't any anymore.
I understand that. This is the real
and
problem.
And facing us is this business of, if Trump is going where some of us think he is going, in this anti-democratic fashion or putsch fashion, then he is going to need the Reichstag fire. And I've always thought that North Korea could be that.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that leave us, panel?
Right.
Well, that's why I asked you the question, what would you do? You said, well, I would talk to them at a lower level.
I would do the same thing that the last three administrations
did. Except that it wasn't where it is now. And now the Chinese, of course, have been appealed to, and they say, believe it or not, they say, we can't deal with these people, basically. We're not being able to do that. Nobody believes it.
Here's what else is going on. We now have a new administration in South Korea, which is backed by the Russians, interestingly, and they are interested in talking with North Korea. We have China, who has a lot more at stake with a nuclear-armed North Korea than we do. Why is it up to Trump, who is not rational, to make a decision about what happens in North Korea in the next few months?
Because the world is watching him as the leader of the free world.
Right. And, you know, there's still this notion that the U.S. is the most powerful nation in the world.
So, okay.
And by the
way, we're supposed to be doing this.
And by the way, we know that this morning's missile can reach Guam. Mm-hmm. And with a little oomph,
it can reach San Francisco.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you propose that he do then? Are you advocating
no.
a military response?
No.
I think diplomacy is the way to go. The problem is we don't know. We don't have anybody in any of these positions, including Rex Tillerson, who really understands what diplomacy is.
Correct.
For him, it's all transactional. For Trump, it's all transactional. And
okay,
so
here's what they could do. I have a solution. Connie Rice, Condoleezza Rice, mm-hmm. former Secretary of State, gave an interview this weekend, amazingly supportive, I think, of Trump and especially of Tillerson, who she advocated. She could be a special envoy to North Korea.
She could do what George Mitchell did in the Middle East for a little while.
Yeah, yep. that would be no loss of face. She is experienced.
Right.
She's dealt with them before.
Okay, so Donald Trump is going to send a black woman to be his envoy.
So that's a twofer for him. He would say, look, I sent a black woman, and she's an experienced.
If he has enough political sense to do it.
Well, we know he doesn't have enough political sense, but this is daydreaming, so.
All right. Libby, I got to get you out of here, but do you want to say goodbye to Rosemary?
Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye.
I love
stay
you.
Stay in touch. I love you, too.
Okay, stay safe. That's the most important thing.
I'll be safe.
And have a good trip.
Thank you.
Okay,
I promise we would
so.
Continue to be to rabble-rouse on yes. the round table.
Yes, and
I have to put the app
email.
On my phone.
Email,
yes.
I promised I would get you to your press
yes,
conference
thank
on
you.
Time, so
okay, I'm leaving.
Off with it. Thank right you very right. much.
Goodbye.
Be
goodbye.
Well. We'll see you on Friday. Thank you very much, Libby.
I'm so bereft. So unhappy that I think I really do have to take some time off. I don't know when I'll be coming back, but I
see,
just
you're
can't
gonna,
stand
you're gonna
the
start
fact
rumors.
That I can't
start
stand,
rumors.
I can't stand the fact that Rosemary is going.
Oh my God, we're the Morning Joe and what's her name?
And, Mika.
Mika Brzezinski.
Yeah,
and
Mika Brzezinski. Yeah.
All right, so I now we are now left with the
left
big
with
story
Rosemary
over the weekend, which is the ransomware attacks. The malicious ransomware attacks that seized computers worldwide Friday and held those systems hostage are likely to worsen this week as millions of people return to work and actually start working on those computers, forcing them to discover the hard way whether they've been affected, according to security analysts. With much of the world still reeling from the digital breach that prevented people from receiving hospital care, a second wave of what European officials have called the biggest ransomware attack ever could be devastating. So they come into your computer and they seize it.
And they say, you want it? You got to pay
$300. You got to pay Bitcoin and you got to pay us. And so if you ever want to see your information again, you have to pay up. So, it first affected Britain's National Health Service before spreading to as many as 150 countries locked down by victims' computers and threatened to delete their files unless they were paid the money. It primarily targeted users of Windows XP, an aging operating system for which Microsoft largely ended support in 2014.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have a Mac this morning. Because if they seized mine and said send Bitcoin, I would have no idea whatever how to do that.
No.
And how do you know that they're going to give it back to you if you pay the money?
What I'm interested in is
they'll seize it again next week.
Yeah, what I'm interested in is how many people have paid the ransom. In other words,
they say an increasing number have because they just want to get it back.
And whether it's illegal or not to pay the ransom, I don't know. I don't think so, but.
Much of the potential damage from Friday's attack was quickly contained by the efforts of a 22-year-old security researcher who goes by Malware Tech Blog on Twitter. The researcher discovered that the unnamed attackers had accidentally included a kill switch in their software that would allow the owner of a particular website to stop the attack by paying about $10 to acquire the domain name. The researcher was able to thwart the malware.
That's pretty cool.
Go geeks, right?
Yeah. There's a hero.
But that victory could be short-lived, experts say, because the software known as WannaCry or WannaDecryptor is likely to be modified soon and continue its spread in a slightly different form. For IT workers and security researchers, the episode highlights the challenge of fighting an ever-mutating foe whose motives are rarely clear. WannaCry is the most high-profile example of a type of attack that analysts have been predicting would surge in 2017 after a substantial uptick in such attacks last year.
So give me a little insight into how all of this works. So doesn't this come from our government had this program? And it got stolen, as I understand.
NSA.
From NSA. Mm-hmm. Now, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, we haven't heard much about that. It got stolen. We know that Microsoft has a patch for this, but NSA never informed them of the theft, so it would be widespread. So they took until like last weekend to come up with a patch for it that makes it, it protects your computer from the attacking software.
Would this be a good day to buy a Microsoft stock? I think so. Because obviously everybody's going to be checking out those XPs and all the rest of that stuff.
It also raises into question all those times when you turn off the updates, which I do routinely because I have a Mac, so I'm safe from this one. But you just turn them off because
you keep
it's
saying
a pain
you're safe from the Mac. But yes, up to now you'd be right.
But there'll be another one, yeah.
But there's always somebody, you know. And the real question is when they get the guy, which they probably will, if they, assuming they're not in Afghanistan or somewhere else, when they get the guy or woman, do you think that there's a chance that they might put him in jail for the rest of his life and next life too?
I don't know. How would they get them? They were saying that the money, because it's Bitcoin, goes into these things called Bitcoin wallets. But anybody who goes in to take money out of the Bitcoin wallet, then you become traceable, so they could find you. So the money's got to just, I think, sit there for a long time until, what, people forget about this?
Hey, they'll figure it out.
And proving to the point that it may not be so much about the money as it is about
the technical genius.
Right.
You're right. They'll have a 22-year-old bad guy geek who will figure out how to get the money without leaving a trace.
So Microsoft on Sunday is blaming us, blaming the U.S., that a software vulnerability stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency had affected customers around the world, and described the spread of the WannaCry ransomware on Friday in many countries as yet another example of the problems caused by the stockpiling of vulnerabilities by governments. So in other words, if you I believe this is correct, but if you hold on to the old software, you don't update it, you don't fix it, and you continue to run your programs on it, then it becomes more and more vulnerable, which allows you then. So basically they're saying, hey, buy the new version of Windows.
That's what I just said.
Yeah. So, but you know, how do you do that?
How do you do what?
Well, I mean, how do you then, right, how do you force everyone into this?
You don't force anybody. They just say, hey, I'm done. I should have replaced these old machines a long time ago.
I figured it out. It's Bill Gates doing this, because now everybody's going to say, oh, we better buy the new version or we'll end up being hacked like happened in
That's good. What Kelly said this morning on the way to work.
Kelly, that's it.
I'm glad you guys are catching up with me.
I see.
10 minutes ago, I said, you may remember.
You were so clear, I guess we just didn't get it.
Well, when you come from Fire Island, you know what you're doing.
Ah! Every program.
I have to. It's a matter of honor.
Well, he's got to get it in now. You're leaving, for God's sake.
I've made it a challenge, yes.
All right. So how do you pack for something like this?
Oh, my gosh. I've been a month ago. I threw open two giant suitcases, and I keep throwing things as I think about it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do just one suitcase so I didn't have to pay anything, because I think it's immoral for the airlines.
You're right.
Idiots when it comes to customer service to charge you to take stuff when you
go on a trip. So you're packing for a year.
You just can't do that.
WAMC, okay. Do you have WAMC sweatshirt?
I do have, I have my WAMC sweatshirt.
Yeah, and maybe
and
a t-shirt.
My First Amendment t-shirt, too.
Yeah.
All right, they made it to the suitcase?
They made it to the suitcase.
Congratulations.
Of course, that assumes the suitcase is going where she's going.
Which is a good thing. I do carry a carry-on that has clean underwear and one change of clothes in it, because you never know.
You never know. Yeah. Now, what about like personal items as far as like pictures and things, you know, you got it all in your phone?
I don't do any of that.
Okay. No. So you're not, because you
no
don't,
cards,
you don't
no
like
letters.
Moving or anything like that. You don't have like
moving.
Well, I mean, you're going to another place. I can't get over the fact, like, if I
My
were going to go
goes,
live...
How can you live out of a suitcase? I love living out of a suitcase. It simplifies everything. You know, the truth is no one really cares if I wear, like, the same outfit twice in a week. In fact, in the places I'm going, most people
do
that.
Do they care now? Do we ever say anything? Oh, Rosemary,
I never wear the same thing twice in a row here.
But that's... Well, why... who cares?
Yeah, they don't. So you pack all that much lighter. Anything that you think, oh, I might use, no, that doesn't make
Okay, but I'm talking about your stuff. Like, I would have to have my favorite coffee mug. I would have to have You don't? Okay.
This is a George Carlin routine.
Right,
know? We have to have our stuff.
Right, good place for my stuff. So,
and then when we travel, we put some of it, we put the best of our stuff
in. But he was talking about a two-day trip to one island of Hawaii to the other. You're talking about living out of a suitcase
Here's
for a year.
Here's what you really need to travel. You need a cell phone.
Yep.
You need an American passport. And you need American dollars. And with that, you can get anything. You can get out of any kind of trouble.
All right.
That's it.
Toothbrush and all.
Toothbrush I carry too, yeah. So three things you need.
All right. So, meanwhile, your stuff remains here in...
Yeah, I have a house here. My mother lives here. My family's here. I will be back here.
And when you are, you'll be back here.
Yes, I will. I'm good at whenever I'm in town, I will make sure to be here for sure.
Excellent. All right. Well, we wish you safe travels.
Thank you.
It seems to worry us more than it worries you, but okay.
It does, yeah. Americans are very insular. You know, travel is wonderful. It's exciting. It changes your life. We all should do it more. I encourage all my students to get passports and travel. I don't know what will happen. I do know it will be great. And even the bad things become the best stories later on. So you just be flexible and use your wits, sort of like arguing with Alan. This was good preparation for traveling abroad. Well,
I would say.
And you just you ask people for help and thank them when they do well by you. And that's it. That was
a parting shot.
Thank you for everything. I have loved being with you guys.
We love you to death. And it's very hard to have you go. And I think there's going to be quite a, you know.
There are people out there saying, get off already. Okay.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Rosemary, be well. Travel safe. And we'll talk to you very soon.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.